priesthood of all believers, which is why someone who is not ordained can offer a sermon. Also, we do have the option of what is called pulpit supply, which would be involving, for example, bringing in a retired minister or somebody who doesn't have a particular flock to attend to on Sunday. But we don't do that in part because we were trying to continue some themes that we had already begun, and in part because we're really cheap. And when I say really cheap, I don't mean that we aren't willing to spend money. It's just that we spend money very carefully. And that's something that we do throughout the entire governance of the church. If you've ever seen Buildings and Grounds, for example, the people who take care of this structure and the associated property, they'll squeeze a penny till Lincoln hollers. These are people who make sure that everything that we spend is spent very carefully. So in any event, that is why I'm preaching today. And we are continuing our series about prayer, and we talked about prayers for help, prayers of thanks, and today, and I'm supposed to do this, to signify wow, is that correct? Thank you. Prayers of wow. And when I was looking for inspiration, I closed my eyes and I thought of what had been said by Oscar Wilde, which is that plagiarism is the sincerest form of flattery. So I was trying to think, now, have I ever heard a sermon about something wowish? And I cast my mind back a long way to when I was in high school, back at the First Presbyterian Church in Sterling, Illinois. The Reverend Mr. Mortensen gave a sermon. And unlike what Emily did, which was share amazing facts, he kind of took a different direction and went a little bit more local. And in Sterling, there's a beautiful park. It sits on what passes for bluffs in Illinois. We're not a real elevated state, but bluffs above the Rock River. And it's called Sinisippi Park. And he invited people to go to Sinisippi Park and take a drive through the park, maybe that afternoon. Or better still, to get out of their cars and walk through the park. And he said, when you get there, you will see on display the full palette of God's colors. You will look at the trees and see shades of red and yellow and burnished with gold. You will look at the water and the sunlight will hit it so that it looks like diamonds are being strewn across the top of the water. And in the calm pools along the shore, you will see the reflection of the sky and the trees. And you will capture a sense of wonder at God's creation. Anyway, I was going to go in that direction, but then I remembered what happened at the end of the sermon. He finished up with the whole service, and he was shaking hands at the back. And actually, before I tell you this next part, Cheryl, could you? This would be embarrassing, but this is our church directory picture from that time frame, and I'm in the middle there. I used to have red hair, you can tell. And in case you're ever wondering about the difference between a smile and a smirk, just take a look in the middle. That's a smirk. And, yeah, that's a smirk. So when I went to see Mr. Mortensen and shake his hand, I said, hey, I really enjoyed your sermon today. It was wonderful. But I have to say, don't the atheists get the same view? And they can go on Sunday morning when it's not so crowded, right? And I didn't hear exactly what he said. In response, he mumbled a little bit, but I think it was, bless you. And so anyway, I decided not to go in that direction and talk about nature in terms of the wow. Let's talk about something else. And that something else is actually the earliest church. The earliest church immediately after the crucifixion. And if we remember, the disciples and the real followers gathered in a room in which they were able to all fit and they were able to lock the doors. And these weren't people who had the resources to hire a hall. These were people who were gathered in a small room. One of the reasons is that the multitudes would have drifted away who had been interested and followed Jesus because at that time, the mere fact that Jesus had been taken, tortured, and crucified would have meant to everybody else that he was indeed not the Messiah. As a matter of fact, according to the Bible, if you are hung on a tree, that was actually anathema. And the Romans did not use crucifixion as a means, really, primarily of execution. They used it as a means of humiliation to demonstrate their power. So even if they tortured you to death, they would crucify you anyway. And the idea was that you would be up on the cross, and you would not be washed and treated the way law called for you to be and compassion called for you to be. You would just be there until you were no longer there. So to most people, this was a clear signal that this Jesus, though he had been very interesting and intriguing, he was not the Messiah. Scholars really don't know how many people gathered as true believers, as true disciples, as those who were really followers of Christ post-crucifixion, but the number is pretty small. There would have been fewer true followers after the crucifixion than there are people in this sanctuary right now. Some people put the number at close to 20. So one of the wows that we could talk about as Christians is, how did that small group of people go out into the world and bring about the religion that all of us follow today? How did they do that? And it wasn't easy, because if you go back in that time, people were every bit as distracted then as they are now. For example, in the Roman capital and in the provinces, there were chariot races regularly. And the chariot teams, they would actually be regular teams, wore certain colors. There would be a blue team and a red team and a green team. And fans of those particular charioteers would adopt those colors and wear them during the week to show that they were actually fans of that particular... Can you imagine anything like this? And so... That was going on. People were busy in a variety of different ways with new discoveries. The Pythagorean theorem, that wasn't something yesterday. It was 500 years before the birth of Christ. Euclidean geometry, that was discovered 300 years before the birth of Christ. 300 years before the birth of Christ, Pythias the Greek had already left a port in Marseille, which was at that time not part of France. It was a Greek outpost, a colony, and he had sailed all the way up into the Arctic Circle and come back with a theory about the lunar impact on tides. There was a lot going on. In addition, Rome was extremely powerful, and Rome had a whole lot of gods for people to make sacrifices to. So how did these 20 or so people in a small backwater province of the Roman Empire create the movement that became known as Christianity? Well, for that, let's turn to Paul and think about Paul, because Paul was, after his conversion, we are told on the road to Damascus, Paul became one of the great evangelizers for the church. So what did Paul do? How did he do it? Well, Paul had been, we know, a tax collector. And the Romans were early outsourcers. So the Romans would have not collected taxes directly. They would have hired local people to do it. And the way you got paid was you collected a little extra, and whatever extra you collected, that was for you. But once Paul converted, Paul was not going to be a tax collector anymore. He repented of that as well. So scholars believe that that Paul made a living as an artisan, probably working in leather. Some speculate that he was a tent maker. So when Paul would come to a town, he would probably get a little stall where he could work and then sell his wares in a market, in a crowded market area, and he might take a room above his stall. That was common then, had a very short commute, and then he would talk to people as he was working. So Paul would be sewing and talking to people, and people would come in, and if there was a transaction, they might spend a little bit more time than people do now. They didn't have an app to just check out on their own. They had to actually talk and bargain and communicate, and Paul would use that time to talk to people about the story that he wanted to share, the story of Jesus Christ. But that had to be a very, very difficult thing for him to do, because he couldn't point to a lot. Here is somebody walking in to talk to Paul, and imagine, again at the time, that they are looking at the splendor of Rome, whether it was in the capital of Rome or in one of the other provinces where there were large cities and large structures built. This was evidence that the gods favored the Romans. They had power, and the gods helped them have this power. And what did Paul have to point to? Well, we have a Messiah. Oh, where's your Messiah now? Well, actually, he was crucified and dead, but he did come back from the dead. And was that enough to build a church on, the idea that Jesus rose again? Probably not, because then we would have we'd all be worshiping at churches of Tabitha or Dorcas, for example. Peter, actually, during the time that he was a disciple, brought Dorcas / Tabitha, Dorcas in Greek, Tabitha in Aramaic, back from the dead. Paul did the same thing. Paul was going on and on at one of these early churches, and he was giving a sermon that seemed to go well past midnight, and there was a young person who was sitting on a windowsill listening, and the young person nodded off and fell out from the third floor and died. And Paul brought that person back from the dead. That's one of the stories in the Bible, but that is not enough to say this individual is the Messiah. Tabitha was not the Messiah. There had to be something else in the story. So imagine here's Paul, and Paul is talking about Jesus, and Paul is sewing, and somebody walks in, and Paul just keeps telling the story, and then Paul goes for the ask. Would you like to join us? We're going to be getting together at a church tonight. And remember, a church at that time was not a building, it was a small group of people. So, we're going to meet at Timothy's place. Timothy the Teamster, he unloads bullock carts over by the Coliseum. And, where's he live? It's easy to find if you go down that long street there. Yeah, past the great big temple to Jupiter, the one all built of marble that towers into the sky, where they're constantly bringing the very best they have to offer in the way of sacrifices. You go past there, and then you take a left, and you'll see the new temple they're building to Mercury, and that one's really going to be spectacular. And then you go down this narrow street, and you'll look for the fifth hovel on the left. That's where we meet. So I'm going to, if I'm being told this story, walk past these temples that reflect power and glory and majesty so I can get to the fifth hovel on the left. Oh, and Paul would also say, and by the way, it's BYOB. That doesn't mean bring your own bottle. It means bring your own bread because we don't have enough to feed you, so you're going to have to bring some for yourself. Again, this was not a church that was being built out of power or majesty, or anything close to that. So what drew people in? What attracted them? Especially in an environment that was just as much like today in so many ways as it could possibly be. I mentioned this before, but if you were driving a bullock cart through ancient Rome, and you cut off somebody in another bullock cart, they would make a gesture at you that you would recognize exactly the same way today, and it would mean exactly the same thing. When Roman soldiers were attacking other towns, Roman soldiers would actually fire things with a catapult into the other town that they were trying to take if they were laying siege. And they would take these rocks and missiles and things that they were going to hurl into this other town, and they would write graffiti on them. And archaeologists have recovered this graffiti, and guess what? It says exactly the same thing that a young man would write on graffiti today if he were really trying to insult the person who was in charge of the town that they were trying to take. That was the environment that Paul was in, not very different. And he had no advantage to tell anybody a story that was going to reflect power and glory. None whatsoever. So what drew people in? Where was the wow? The real wow did not lie in our ability to conquer. It lay in a different direction. It lay in God's grace, in what God offered as a gift. Not a gift that anybody could earn, not a gift that anybody would ever deserve, but rather a gift that you had merely to accept in order to have your life be touched and to begin to live differently. That's all really that Paul had to offer. And he was offering it again into imperfect congregations. If you read Paul's letters, he's constantly telling people, hey, when you have meetings, don't let the rich people who show up early eat all the food and not need enough of the buffet or the potluck dinner for all the poorer members of the congregation. Don't put yourselves up as being superior to other members of the congregation. That's not what we're all about. He was preaching into exactly the same kind of human foibles that have been around for thousands of years. But again, he was offering a unique message that you wouldn't hear when you talk to the priest at the temple of Venus, for example, which was all about power and glory if you made the right sacrifices. This was instead a humble story about a humble, itinerant, probably day laborer. It's unlikely that Jesus actually had a wood shop somewhere that people came to buy tables and chairs. It's far more likely that Jesus went from place to place and helped build the wooden parts of structures as they were going up. That's as humble as it could get at the time. And the message was from a humble person who was the risen Lord to humble people. And that was the message of grace. So where does the wow really lie? And I invite everybody to remark at and be amazed at the wonders of our natural world and to be good stewards of the wonders of our natural world. But if you're really looking for wow, it's important to look somewhere else. It's to look at the consequence of that message of grace, how it touches people and causes them to live differently. So to me, wow is not an amazing night sky full of stars. To me, wow is what happened last Sunday morning. Last Sunday, those of you who were out and about will remember that it was pretty cold. And so we extended the hours for our PADS guests in order to act as a warming center until we could arrange rides for them to warming centers that would be opening up in other parts of the western suburbs. And some of you may have walked in and come in through the doors off the parking lot where a number of our guests were waiting for Lyft or Uber rides that we were providing for them, and they were taking a smoke break. And so if you walked in that way, you've got a chance to actually see a lot of the people who had sheltered in our church that particular night. And I think last night we had 31 guests, even though it was slightly warmer, still not a night that you would want to spend outside. That is, to me at least, a wow moment. That is the story that Paul is telling about grace and what it really means coming to life 2,000 years later. And it's really important to realize how much people in a situation like that could really use a little bit of grace. If you've ever been out there early in the morning, one of the things that you may chance to see, and it's not the most fun thing to see, is people coming out to leave. And there's a container that's kind of to the side over there, and it's got a long tube, and then at the bottom, it's got a closed-off container, and that's to put cigarettes in. And that's so that people don't put the cigarettes in the trash and potentially start a fire. It's designed to quickly put the cigarettes out and collect all the cigarette butts in one convenient place so it's easier to clean up. On more than one occasion, when I've been out there early in the morning, I've seen somebody leaving, one of our PADS guests leaving, walk over to that container, pop the top off, bend over and kind of scooch around in a little bit, looking for a cigarette that isn't smoked all the way down to the filter. And then take that cigarette and light it and then go on their way. That's a person who can use a little bit of grace. And that's a person who has experienced some of that here because of all of you. That's a wow moment. That's what wow probably really means. And that's why the simple, humble message that began to spread 2,000 years ago continues to spread today. And it's up to us to continue to spread that message. Amen?